Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from sunny Southern California. Doug Gottlieb Show is brought to you by Farmers at Farmers. We've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything. When it's game time, have an experienced player help you stay to the game. Put their experience into play at farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Well, welcome in. Back on this show, I guest hosted Colin Cowherd's show 4 days of last week. And if you missed it, it was amazing. But we will not regurgitate because we are on to the next phase. Much like, thankfully for a timely penalty kick, the U.S. Women's National Team is on to the next round. Whew. Whew. All right, that's all we're going to do for soccer. There we go. We do have a little baseball to talk about today. One team that lost but won historically, and what baseball is now admitting to the reality of why balls fly out of the yard. Wait to hear that one. Kenyon Martin's going to join us. Denny Hamlin's going to join us. Carson Palmer's going to join us. And UConn is going to rejoin the Big East as the Big East will go to 11. This one goes to 11. Spinal Tap? Nobody? Nobody likes Spinal? Okay. And then we have Kawhi Leonard, who we all wait for. Okay? We all wait to figure out exactly what Kawhi Leonard is going to do. And while we wait and we try and figure it out, the city of Toronto has gushed with praise, has given him so much love and adulation. His teammates even laughed at his uncomfortable laugh, even when he mocked his uncomfortable laugh with a fake uncomfortable laugh. Everything he says is funny. Every meal is picked up. Every time he enters a building, he gets a standing ovation. And suddenly, the last outpost of the NBA has become the destination for all the media. That's because everyone wants to know what Kawhi Leonard is, in fact, doing. Which is interesting, because isn't that one of the reasons that Kawhi Leonard didn't want to do the Lakers thing? I do think that part of it is he wants a piece of LeBron James. This was the same thought that Kevin Durant had when he went to Golden State. Kevin Durant went to Golden State, and I've had a very powerful former basketball player tell me he's close to KD, and that KD told him, hey, the reason I went to Golden State, or I want a shot at LeBron in the NBA Finals. And he got those two shots, and he was the better player. He was the MVP. He hit the big shots over LeBron James, and that's why KD now, you know, even before he tore his Achilles tendon, was searching for respect because he thought he earned it on the floor against LeBron. Well, now you have a LeBron-led Lakers team, and I guess if you're Kawhi, you could wait for him in the finals in if you stay in Toronto, or you can go to L.A. with a competitive team and say, I just think I'm better. We're going to be better because I'm there and they're already good. What if I took his adopted city from him and made it into my own? I would point out that there are no billboards that have ever convinced anyone in the NBA of deciding where they're going to play their future. Like, you know, I was thinking about staying in Toronto, then I saw those two billboards that were in Los Angeles, even though I wasn't in Los Angeles, and I decided I want to be in Los Angeles. Wouldn't you love it? I like, look, athletes already always lie to us at press conferences anyway, and they tell us it's not about the money. Wouldn't you love it if they said, like, well, it's not about the money, it's about the billboards. Strike straight-faced, it's about the billboards. But is there the possibility that Toronto, in their effort to show Kawhi Leonard just how special Toronto is, that they're doing it too much, that they've gone overboard? Nava Bhatia, who is the super fan. He's the guy with the turban. He was an immigrant early on in when he immigrated to Toronto. The Raptors were just starting off. He purchased season tickets. Right? And when he bought season tickets, he didn't have a ton of money. And now he does. He owns a bunch of car dealerships. He's an unbelievable success story in the city of Toronto. And he is a staple at every Toronto home game. He is their Clipper Darryl. He is their Jack Nicholson. And he had this to say about Toronto fans going overboard.
He's going out in the city. He's being harassed. He's being, followed. I believe that let him enjoy the city right now. Let him enjoy his privacy right now with his family. And, just leave him alone. Let him enjoy the city.
Right? I mean, I think... Like, the whole reason he didn't want the LeBron thing was the paparazzi, was the constant questions, was the harassment. I'm sure some of it is he wanted to be the best player on a team and show, look, I can guard that guy. I'm better than that guy. He wanted the old one-on-one, the old, Magic versus Bird, my team versus yours. But he also likes to do things at his own pace, do things quite quietly, and just go about his business. It's a really hard thing. Guys struggle with this all the time. Now, maybe music, you could speak to it because you were on the dating scene far more recently than me and Ramos, who have a combined 40 years of marriage. But how many days after you go on a date with a chick are you, like, your first date before you make contact with her again?
I think it was the 2 or 3 day rule.
Just seems dumb to me.
Got to let it breathe a little bit.
Do you? What if you really had a good time?
Don't want to come off overzealous.
Why not?
It can rub people the wrong way.
It can, but then when they're not your people then, right? If whatever you're feeling, they're not feeling, and whatever you want to communicate, they won't want to communicate, well, then they probably weren't your person to begin with. That would be my personal thing.
Well, it's not that they don't feel that way about you. Perhaps they have a different way of approaching different situations.
Right, and they might get creeped out by it. Right.
Maybe they do like you, but they don't want the feeling as if you're ready to just like run it into the next phase, and they're just like, whoa, I'm still trying to get to know you.
Right. No, I get it, and which, everyone wants something different. Everyone wants a different level of attention, a different level of adoration. I think that's probably what I would struggle with the most if I was in the dating scene. Which is, I'm just like, I like something, I like it. I like a workout, I do that workout until, like, I don't want to do that workout again. I like a coffee, that's the coffee that I get all the time. And if I was to go on an awesome date, I want that person to know, like, that was an awesome date. Let's go do it again. And then again, and then again, and then again. Because if it's your person, then you don't really get tired of their presence. You enjoy every part of them. And if it's not, well, then, and look, some part of it is, I understand the letting it breathe. You do, like, absence makes the heart grow fonder. If you actually miss somebody, like, who do you actually miss in this world? That's the people you really care about. But I think I would struggle with that. But that seems to be what Toronto's struggling with. They just want to show him that they love him, and he's like, got it, know it, not really what I needed to hear, or do you actually need to hear it? It's a really hard thing, isn't it? In the over-communication, under-communication, I'm generally an over-communicator. And I feel like Kawhi Leonard is an under-communicator. And I think Toronto, in their effort to be different, is the type of potential significant other who wants to over-communicate their affection for him, and it may be to their detriment. Does that make sense? On the other hand, if we get right down to it, and you're Kawhi Leonard, and you have balance about you, none of this should really involve itself in why you're making your decision. Because whatever level of attention you get now, that's going to die down. But you shouldn't want to make your decision based upon that level of tension. But again, that's how I live my life. That may not be how he lives his life. And the only thing he can judge Toronto based upon is his own personal experience. And right now, his own personal experience is Drake, celebration, championship, and everyone freaking out over his presence like he's royalty. Nobody leaves me. A guy who just wants to be left alone to play basketball can't be left alone to watch a damn baseball game. Can't go on a dinner date with his girlfriend, who's the mother of his child. Can't pick up some I just want to pick up some boxes from Home Depot. Oh, he's moving. Yes, every NBA player who has a home in the States has to pack up some stuff before they go home for the summer. That doesn't mean I'm not coming back. Right? He could have been moving stuff to paint a room. He could have been moving stuff to storage. He could have been moving to a different house in Toronto. Could have been a dead body that somebody chopped up that he needed to help put away. All of these things are possible. What we don't know is if boxes mean he's actually moving. And oh yeah, by the way, tweeting about his every move probably annoys the hell out of him, which will drive him away, even though the intent is to show him your love. Everybody does want love, but sometimes love is, hey, I need space. If you really love me, give me a day.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Last Friday at Sonoma Raceway, Denny Hamlin unveiled a special Darrell Waltrip throwback tribute paint scheme for his number 11 FedEx Express Toyota for the race in Darlington, South Carolina around Labor Day. Of course, most of you know Darrell Waltrip's a Hall of Famer, three-time Cup champion. He retired from Fox Sports broadcasting booth yesterday. That was Sunday at Sonoma. DW is, one, hilarious, and two, just a beloved guy. And Danny Hamlin kind of to spend some time with us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Do you remember the first time you actually met Darrell?
Oh, first time I met Darrell. Oh, gosh, I had to be a kid, probably in an autograph session, to be honest with you. I mean, we used to go around and get all the drivers autographed. Me and my mom would take me around every time they came to Richmond. She'd have a whole list of the driver appearances and whatnot, and we'd go chase around autographs all night. So I'm sure I met him at one point through there. But by the time I came into the Cup Series, he was already in his fifth or sixth season at Fox in the booth. So, that was mainly the interaction I've had with him has been professionally through that.
So I find it fascinating, and obviously, Jeff Gordon now part of the booth as well. He brings kind of a different view and a different style because he's from a different era of racing. When DW's in the booth, and I mean, he always seemed like he was having a good time. What's been the reaction of drivers? Because a lot of times drivers, if you guys don't like what somebody's saying about you guys or about what's taking place, you'll let it be known to the powers that be. What's been the general sense of what he's been like as a broadcaster?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been great for our sport. And obviously, I think his role, when you look at how the booth plays out on a weekly basis, he kind of takes you back to, well, what was it like when he raced? And I think he tries really, really hard to stay up to date, stay current. I know, a lot of the Fox guys have dinners with current drivers all the time to try to make sure they're up to date with the information that they're giving and the analysis that they're giving. I think that he was kind of unfairly criticized at times, and I think that he's a different guy. He really is a different guy, and when you hear him sometimes, and for the casual fan, I think sometimes it's easy to say, oh wow, this guy, he'll set you back 20 years. Well, he's just trying to do his best to relate to the people at home what's going on out there on the racetrack in the best terms that he knows how. And the best terms that he knew how were from 20 years ago when he did it himself. Right. So I think, it came at a good time for him. He had, donated 40-some years to his life on the road with NASCAR. And, I mean, the driver's really indebted to him because he's really been a great ambassador to the sport for us. And, we're glad to send him off, and you know, hope him, wish him the best in his next adventure, and you know, hang around Stevie all the time. So I can't wait to see what he does next.
All right, obviously you've had success in some different raceways, but you know, Daytona you won this year. What was Sonoma? What's a course like Sonoma like for you personally?
Well, it's a challenge. I mean, I think it's the most technical road course that we have. Typically, you know, for the fan that doesn't know, we race ovals most of the time. So when we race the road course, it's kind of out of our element, I guess you could say. We only run three of them per year. This was the first one of the season. So I personally like the challenge of it. I think that it tests us in things that, you know, not many of us grew up racing, turning left and right. And so it's a challenge for us, but you know, these are the best drivers in the world, and I'll put them up against anyone. And we've seen even road course guys try to come in and be competitive against the Cup guys and just can't do it. And these are the best of the best, and you learn quickly that you know, it's not easy to go out there and compete, especially when you got to race on tracks like Sonoma that are so tough.
Okay, so now, like, the special paint job, which I know you're going to break out, what, at Darlington?
Yeah.
Okay, why Darlington? Why is that the one that you're going to break out this paint job at?
So, you know, each year at Darlington, for those that don't know, they have what they call Throwback Weekend in NASCAR. So what they'll do is they'll take the cars and the teams will do a throwback paint job to a certain era. And for this year, the era was, you know, 1990s. So I got to thinking about, and really it was afforded the FedEx has been so great to me. They, after my Daytona win, they said, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll let you design your Darlington throwback car to be anything that you want. You know, whatever you want it to be, we're going to say good, approved. And that's tough for a company like FedEx. They're pretty particular about their brand and everything.
Right.
But, you know, for me, that was right around the time that Darrell Waltrip was announcing his retirement. And I got to thinking, I was like, you know, he was so crucial and important to the history of the number 11 car that I currently race.
Sure.
I wanted to pay tribute to him and thank him for, you know, everything he's done for us, not only on the racetrack, but now in the booth as well. So I went to them and says, look, I want to do a Darrell Waltrip throwback scheme from 1991. And that kind of is a way for me to pay tribute to Darrell Waltrip, along with going with the throwback scheme of Darlington's race. So I think it was pretty simple for me to choose that, and it was great to be able to design it.
All right, Denny, I got like 15 seconds. You're a Jordan brand guy. Are you going to wear some throwback? Are you going to wear throwback Jordans when you're in the when you're driving the throwback car?
Absolutely.
Which ones?
We'll go one.
All right, good. I like that. In the red, black, and white ones. In the all white. What color scheme? Any?
Well, his paint scheme is white, black, and orange. So I'll get something custom done in that color.
Fair enough.
Color scheme.
Fair enough. Good luck with the rest of the season. Can't wait to see you in Darlington in that car. And thanks so much for joining us, Denny.
Thanks, Doug.
Denny Hamblin, who has just set a record for most text messages received while on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Lots of things I would love to change about baseball. I personally love baseball. I do think that in-game betting is going to help propel baseball back into the daily discussion. Maybe not on our show, but betting shows are coming to seemingly every network. And because of it, I think baseball is going to be big business to bet baseball in the summer, not just betting baseball lines, but betting baseball, what happens, you know, pitch to pitch, out to out. I'm a bigger baseball fan than I let on. I don't watch every game, although I've watched the end of the last three Dodgers games. Los Dodgers have had three straight walk-offs by three different rookies. That's crazy. Actually, it's not crazy. You know what it is? That's baseball. Right? You can actually use that's baseball for anything that doesn't make sense, because that's what baseball people use that's baseball for. Well, you know, he was hitting 400 and then he went on an 0 for 40 slump. Hey, you know, that's baseball. Comes in, he walks the first batter. You know, he gives up, there's an error at second base, trying to turn a double play. gets to two strikes with two outs, gives up a flare single, lose the game on a runner who scores from second. That's baseball. You know what else is baseball? Home runs have become baseball. What's old is new, and you go back to the mid-90s, early 21st century, early 2000s, and home runs, chicks dig the long ball, were the rage. And it was always about, or seemingly always about, the players being juiced. Right? The players being juiced. This from Rob Manfred, who's the commissioner of Major League Baseball, on the idea of the baseball being juiced, not the players. Major League Baseball's official stance on this year's historic home run pace, as Manfred relayed in his batch of baseballs, having less drag due to the pill at the center of the ball. Drag is incredibly important in determining how likely a hitter is to knock it out of the park. As baseballs become more aerodynamic, they travel further, given a certain initial velocity. A deep fly ball that might have been caught at the warning track instead go into the first row of the stands. 3% change in drag coefficient can work to add about 5 feet to a well-hit fly ball, which can turn an increase in home runs league-wide an astounding 10 to 15%. There's a low drag rate in 2017. There were a record 6,105 home runs hit that season. That pace is they're on pace to shatter that this year with over 6,600 home runs. 16 players have already hit 20 home runs. Last June 21st, only four players did 20 home runs by the same date. In 2017, it was just seven. Right? It's crazy what's happened. Crazy what's happened. Now, I don't think it's just the baseball. I don't. I believe that a big part of it is the change in approach of the batters and how baseball is taught and how hitting is taught in terms of what you're actually swinging for. When we were kids and you got two strikes, what would they tell you? Choke up and just put it in play. Because when you're in youth baseball, you put it in play and it sure seems like less than 50% of the time they actually complete the play, doesn't it? Trust me, I watch a lot of youth baseball games. But that is change in Major League Baseball. Bunting, which has reemerged at certain times, like Carpenter of the Cardinals bunted to a double. I pointed out that, what's his name? What's the leadoff hitter of the Dodgers? Chris Taylor. Chris Taylor, first and third bunt last week, end up plating a run because the team wasn't really, they were taking on the Giants and their rotations were off. And he laid a perfect bunt between first and actually more to second base between the pitcher and the first baseman. But the second baseman was covering first, and so he couldn't cover the bunt. And they actually went from first and third with one out to first and third with one out and plating a run because of one bunt. But the commissioner is telling you, hey, we changed the drag coefficient. He's using scientific terms. It doesn't mean he's wrong, but basically what he's told you is, hey, we loaded up the baseball. Go back and look at the World Series between the Giants and the Astros 2 years ago and all the balls that flew out of the yard in that series. It was a record. They had a record during individual games and a record for a series. Over one third of the time in Major League Baseball, over one third of the time, you don't need anybody other than the pitcher, the hitter, the catcher, because it's walkout, strike, or home run. The game has become about the long ball. And though we thought, chicks dig the long ball, because you're waiting so long in between every home run, the game becomes increasingly boring. It's frankly, like if you went to an NBA game and they were just chucking up half-court shots. Right? They're just taking 40-foot Damian Lillard game-ender threes. And yeah, they're going to hit some. And when they hit some, it's super exciting. But what about all the misses? I mean, honestly, it's not any different than sometimes watching the Rockets play when they get into three-point shooting fest. Or the Nets play when they get into three-point shooting fest. You know, the only difference is there's no defense and there's no dunks. And it's just a different game. But the commissioner is admitting, and he actually said, look, our official stance is it's about drag coefficient. Our unofficial stance is, yeah, dude, we told Rollins, make this baseball jump. Make it feel about the same for the pitchers, but make it jump. You know why? We save our sport. That was the idea. And the problem with it is they've also moved the fences in. Players have gotten stronger. There is a lot of platooning, so guys are only hitting pitchers that they can hit. And they've changed people's approaches where there are no more two-strike approach in the box for most of these hitters. You put all those factors together, and you got 66. You're on pace for over 6,600 home runs. I'm not saying I don't like Rob Manfred for being honest, but he's being honest, and he's telling us that it's become a different game because they've changed the ball. And look, this is the same thing that's happened in golf. And why they want a universal golf ball, because some of those golf balls just fly. Has the equipment gotten better? Yes. Has the golfers gotten better? Yes. Is there more science to it? Absolutely. But the golf ball being different, made differently, shaped differently, flying differently, changes so much of the sport. And the same is true in baseball. Using the term drag coefficient is a really nice scientific way of saying we loaded up the baseball because we thought you'd like us more if we did so. And home runs in baseball are like makeup on women. I think a woman's far more beautiful if you enjoy her with limited or no makeup. It's true. Like, if you have to put a bunch of stuff on, I mean, I can see that it's makeup. Even if it's really good, like, I can see it. It's not your real face. I don't mind a wrinkle. I don't mind a blemish. That's a real human being there. It makes you even more beautiful. Same thing with baseball. A ground ball that's got eyes, to me, is good baseball. I mean, I've seen some double plays this year that are ridiculous. The glovesmanship of some of these guys. There's nothing like a two-out rally. Everybody's got their rally hats on, and you're just trying to get the guy to put the ball in play. Like, dude, I get it. Home runs are exciting. Slam dunks, three-pointers are exciting. But we cut away the mid-range game in baseball. We're cutting in basketball, and we're cutting away some of the subtle nuances of baseball. And it feels like we thought we were making a prettier game, just like women think they're making themselves better looking by getting all done up and putting on a ton of makeup. You look like a pretty woman with too much makeup on. Whereas if you don't have too much makeup on, you just look like a pretty woman. Baseball's an awesome game. I don't believe it's for everybody. I do think they can continue to pick up the pace of play. But what they don't need is to doctor baseballs in order to artificially create this home run derby effect. But that's exactly what they've done.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Carson Palmer's an Orange County dude. He's become a fly fisherman extraordinaire. That's what he is. He's also getting inducted in the Cardinals Ring of Honor. The ceremony will take place at State Farm Stadium. That's the Glendale, used to be University of Phoenix, right? When the Cardinals host their rival, the Seahawks, and he joins us now on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Have you been fishing today?
I have not. I've had to shift my focus a little bit to my golf game and really work on my golf game because I've got the American Century Championship in Lake Tahoe coming up in about 2.5 weeks. So my fly fishing game has slipped a little bit, and just for future references, Doug, I would hope that you could call me a fly fisherman aficionado.
Aficionado?
As opposed to extraordinaire.
Extraordinaire. Okay, aficionado and extraordinaire. What is the difference?
I don't know. It kind of sounds cooler to me.
Okay, aficionado. I know it's because you've seen that Cigar Aficionado Rich Guy magazine, and you're like, I always want to be a fly fishing aficionado, right? Is there a fly fishing? Do you have a fly fishing magazine?
Well, I don't think there is a – I don't know if it's called Fly Fishing Magazine. There's a number of different publications on fly fishermen, but I am a member of the Trout Stream. I'm a member of something I send a check into every month to make sure that the trout streams are taken care of and the hatcheries are firing on all cylinders, so the fishing stays good.
Very nice. Very. What is the best time of year? For people who don't know, you live in Idaho. What is mm-hmm. the absolute best time of year? Because, you know, now is the time when all of us tourists, all of us California raisins come up, and we come up and we try and learn the arts, the better arts from a guy like you, a fly fishing aficionado. What is the best time of year?
Now's not great. The rivers are still pretty high from there's a lot of water coming off the mountains because there's still snow on some of the mountains. So right now there's a lot of tourists in the water that are actually probably striking out and having some over days in the water just because it's tough to fish right now. But once the kind of 4th of July, July, August crowd leaves, September is spectacular. You got football season going. The leaves start changing. There's nobody on the water, and the fishing's off the charts.
All right, Carson Palmer joining us. What do you think of what the Cardinals chose to do? Where Josh Rosen's their guy, then he's not their guy. Now Kyler Murray is their guy. Seems kind of quick, but you've lived this life before. You came in and you didn't play, right? You backed up John Kitna and redshirted for a year. Rosen, I think the idea was to have him redshirt. They had, you know, Mike Glennon as a backup. They had Sam Bradford, but that they pulled the plug on that. What do you think of what the Cardinals chose to do?
Well, I think they looked at it like, you know, Kyler Murray's a once-in-a-generation type talent potentially, and just weren't willing to let him potentially be that guy and not draft him and let somebody else draft him. So, you know, I think they're just from watching college film, you watch Kyler's film, and it's you just can't stop watching it. It's everything he does is spectacular. And Rosen's more of a pocket passer, a guy that's going to sit in there and throw the ball accurately down the field. But Kyler's just that guy. He could be, you know, somebody that this league hasn't seen in a long time, or maybe ever. I mean, his stature, his speed, his quickness, his elusiveness, the success he had in college, those things align to be a great, great player. And maybe they had enough of a look in Josh and realized that Kyler, he's just too enticing to pass up.
Hmm. Carson Palmer joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Obviously, you still watch a ton of football. You've told me that before. How far away is Sam Darnold from being special?
Well, I think this is his breakout year. Obviously, getting a guy like Le'Veon on the backfield to take a lot of the pressure off in the red zone and on third and four or less type situations, just getting him the ball somehow, some way, whether it be a screen or just turning and handing it to him. That's going to take a ton of pressure off. They don't have a ton of guys on the outside, a true, you know, defined number one. So they're still kind of working through that, but they've got a lot of pieces on defense, and I think he's poised to have a huge year. And obviously in New York, it's going to get blown out of proportion, you know, one way or the other. It seems to go in that kind of a market. But I think he can explode on the scene and have a great year and maybe find a way to get in the playoffs out of the NFC East.
You know, when you first got to the
AFC East.
when you first got to the Bengals. They were the Bungles, right? They were much like kind of people looked at the Browns the last couple of years, and Kitna helped kind of solidify, you know, stabilize things, and you turn that thing around. So there's some similarities to that of the Browns, and you had some big, you know, big egos and big talents at wide receiver that you play with, Chad, and of course Hoosh. What are the challenges like from your perspective for somebody? You know, somebody who's a quarterback of a team like the Browns, like, you know, he's doing a lot of talking, but for the most part, it's in support of his teammates. What do you think of what's going on in Cleveland?
Yeah, I mean, he's putting himself in a much more difficult situation. It already was a difficult situation playing for that organization, and just the chaos that organization seems to be surrounded with for decades now. And then you bring in, you know, some of the, you know, the electric athletes that are also very outspoken, and the Odell Beckhams and Jarvis Landry, and now Baker's one of those guys. So, man, he better win. That's how I sit back and look at it, because when you're winning, you know, Odell can't say this or that in the media, and Jarvis can't pop off on social media, and all those distractions seem to kind of be put at bay when you're winning. But as soon as you start losing, all of those are magnified, and those are real issues and real problems. So, you know, I think they've got a tough thing coming. You know, they do have a lot of talent. They have a lot of guys that you could just get. You can get the ball to Odell on a slant, and he can take it for 60 at any moment in the game. Which, kind of like we're talking about with Sam Darnold, those are stress relievers. Those take some heat off you as a quarterback, where you get to throw an easy completion and watch a guy make a couple guys miss and go all the way. So, they have a ton of talent. There's no doubt about that. But it just seems, you know, that looks like one of those things that it could get real dangerous and real ugly if they don't come out hot and win their first four games.
So much has changed since you were a rookie. I mentioned that you redshirted, right? Like, you sat behind Kitna. Mm-hmm. But because these contracts now, you can figure out if you want a guy or don't want a guy. You're not as financially invested. I don't know, for whatever reason. And I think some of it is guys throw more at a younger age. Maybe that's the excuse that they're making, and the game has kind of evolved to a little bit of the college game. Do you still think it's better to sit? Like, now that you've had a chance to reflect on your own career, what's the better way, sitting or playing right away?
Well, I just look at the contract length. You're going from, when I was coming out, there were 6 and 7 year contracts, and now it's 4 or 5 with an option. So it's just not feasible in the new CBA. It's just not feasible to have a guy that is taking up 7 to 10% of your salary cap sit for an entire year. Although it can be great if, in my situation, John Kitten, to sit back and learn everything from. It was so beneficial having that opportunity. So if you have somebody like that, like a Josh McCown, who's done a great job of that, really, who recently just retired and seamless, you know, everywhere he went, he kind of was that guy. That's an unbelievable situation to be in. Sam Darnold just was in that situation. But with only having a guy for 4 years and having to figure out if you're going to pay him $35 million a year at the end of that fourth year of his contract, that's his rookie deal, you need all those years to be able to evaluate him, to see him, to watch him, to be in the facility and see if you're going to commit to him long term. So in today's game, you can't sit and watch. These guys have to play in year one.
Carson Palmer is going to be inducted into the Cardinals Ring of Honor, kind enough to take some time away from fly fishing, because right now they're just not biting. That's the only reason he really picked up the phone. He's joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. I don't know if you saw this kind of controversy a little bit in Green Bay. So Aaron Rodgers has been with Matt LaFleur for all of, like, I don't know, 10 workouts. And LaFleur's style, which he got from a couple of his previous stops, from Kyle Shanahan and from Sean McVay, is instead of having, you know, you can do whatever you want in the playbook because you're Aaron Rodgers, you basically give the guy two plays. He goes up the line of scrimmage, and he's got two plays, and you pick which one you want to run. And Aaron Rodgers is like, look, I've been doing this for 11 years. I can do that stuff, and I have the amount of experience almost no one has. So Brett Favre came out, and he's like, look, let Aaron be Aaron. What do you think about how you would coach and how you would advise Aaron Rodgers in a system which is very different from the one that he previously worked on?
Yeah, I mean, I'm letting Aaron play. You do have to have some constraints, but if you're riding Seabiscuit in the Kentucky Derby, you're letting Seabiscuit run. You're letting him go. With Aaron's experience, with LaFleur's lack of experience, it's not like LaFleur's been doing this for 30 plus years in the NFL. I'm letting Aaron be Aaron, and Aaron's got enough on the line. It's important enough for Aaron that his team play well and they have a ton of success and they go to the Super Bowl and all those things that come with being who Aaron Rodgers is. I'm absolutely letting Aaron play. If Aaron sees something different or gets a feel or has an itch to throw a certain ball or get a ball in a certain guy's hands, I'm letting them do it. Now, Sam Darnold and Josh Allen, some of these young guys, they're going to be in my system and run my system and do what I ask them to do until they prove otherwise. Aaron's established. Aaron's proven. I'm letting Aaron play if I'm his coach.
Great stuff. Carson, listen, enjoy the summer with your kids. Can't wait to see if you come down to Orange County. In the meantime, congratulations on the induction, which is forthcoming in September, into the Cardinals Ring of Honor. Appreciate you being our guest, man.
Thanks for having me on, Doug. Always good catching up, man. Have a great summer.
You too. That's a fly fishing aficionado, Carson Palmer.